Welcome to a special episode of Comic Pop Library. In this episode, I visit with Jeff Anderson, owner of the Videotopia exhibit currently on display at Exploration Place in Wichita, Kansas. The exhibit is sponsored by Jenny and Kramer Reed, Butler Community College, Ciro's Candies, and Schuco Sievert. And now, let the game continue with our Second Life.
I see you fighting round town with your Pokemon, but it's not Pikachu.
Pikachu!
And the name that I call when I throw Pokeballs is always Pikachu, baby. I choose you, said I would choose Meowth, but he won't shut his mouth. Huh, ain't that some sh?
Ain't that some sh?
I've overcome this hurdle by defeating Squirtle with a Pikachu.
I'm here at the Exploration Place at the exhibit Videotopia. It's brought to us by Jeff Anderson. He was nice enough to loan this to the Exploration Place. It is a national traveling exhibit, the way I understand it.
It is, yeah. Goes all around the country.
And when you first got into the gaming, was it just your love from a young age, or was this something that came on later in life?
No, from a young age. I actually started collecting arcade machines when I was about 14, 15 years old, and always had a love of arcade games, home games, just video games in general.
Did you work on them when you got them if they were broke down? Did you have to teach yourself, or did somebody help you out?
Yeah, I kind of figured it out on my own. I mean, I was always kind of into electronics as well, and you have to have a decent working knowledge to be able to repair a lot of these things. They could be a handful. So yeah, I mean, that was kind of the attraction too. I mean, just being able to work on them and repair them.
And where's your home base at?
I'm based out of New Jersey.
So you are in the heart of the country.
Well, yeah, yeah.
Crisscrossed pretty much.
Yeah, quite a bit. I mean, I'm from Minneapolis too, but originally.
So it kind of makes it fun to be able to do this and see your stuff on display.
Oh, yeah, it's great.
Do you travel with it for the most part to set it up and then come back and tear it down?
Yeah, yeah, always to set it up and to remove it, and then also to, you know, to maintain it, because, you know, there's always something to work on these machines.
When you ship these, explain how fragile these can be in shipping process.
Well, yeah, they can be quite fragile. I mean, mainly just because of their age. There's a lot of, you know, electronic components and things inside them that even just kind of moving them around, connections and things like that can just kind of get dirty, and we'll get, you know, little issues here and there. So, I mean, you know, physically moving them, you know, we have to protect them pretty well just to keep the artwork in good shape. But just, you know, having them, you know, being moved around and rattled around, I mean, even, you know, they can develop little issues like that.
And that's one of the things I was going to comment on was the artwork on the sides. You know, I'm taking as many pictures of the artwork to put up on the Facebook page as
sure
I can. Was that also part of the allure for you, was artwork on the side?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, many of the machines have some really neat artwork on the cabinets. And, you know, especially here, we like to keep them on display. We don't like to put games close to each other. You know, you want to be able to see all the artwork of them. But, yeah, definitely the artwork and the cabinet design is very much part of the experience of playing these games.
And it seems like, I know that businesses, they want to make their money, but mm-hmm. you're losing that aspect of the art when you're actually in an arcade anymore. It seems like they're just pushed up against each other to get as many in as possible.
Yeah, there's no emphasis on that. They're worried about making quarters. So
on the scale, what is this percentage of your collection?
We have about maybe 250, 300 machines in total. So there's about 45 here.
Okay. So do you store them in a warehouse-type setting
until
they're ready to be put on display?
Yep.
Or just visit every so often to play some games?
Yeah, yeah. No, our main warehouse facility is in New Jersey. So we do all the, you know, all the repair and storage and everything is all done from there.
Do you, and I talked to Christina about this when I was visiting with her, looks like this goes primarily to the mid-90s.
Yes.
Do you get anything past that point as well?
We can, but the thing is it's kind of interesting how the time frame works for arcade games, but right at around 2000, 2001 is kind of when there stopped being innovation in arcade games, because that was right around the same point where home game consoles, like, you know, the PlayStations and sort of thing, kind of caught up with graphics technology. So there wasn't really any big advancements in arcade games, and that's kind of around the same time people stopped going to the games, you know, to the arcades to play. I mean, there still were, you know, many games released that, you know, that people might like to play, but the emphasis of this is on the early technology. So because, you know, some of the games released in the up after 2000, you might still find them at your laundromat or you know, or a bar or something. Some of those can still be found. So we try to focus on this early stuff that's really you don't see very often.
It seems like shopping malls are the place where the majority of the arcade centers are at.
Well,
seems like.
Yeah, where they used to be. I mean, there's actually very few left now. Yeah, I mean, you know, it used to be nearly every mall had at least one arcade. And I think the majority of the malls don't have arcades now. But
it's pretty much the advent of the home gaming system. That's pretty much...
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. I mean, it, you know, it's a very different experience playing games from home now. You know, online gaming and... you know, and the more experiential, you know, long save your game and keep continuing type of gameplay. It's very different than from the arcade experience.
With your collecting the video games and electronics aspect, did this lead into what you're doing now professionally, or is this just still a hobby?
Well, both. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's what I enjoyed, so it's, you know, it's what I ended up doing.
I think most people would be surprised when they turn to these. There's quite a few wires and circuit board, all that type of stuff. It's not just you're getting in. Like you said, you were pretty much self-taught.
Yeah.
Unless you're willing to do that, it probably take a little bit of further education to probably work on these on a basis.
Yeah, yeah. They're definitely complicated. I mean, you know, they're basically just full, you know, computer systems, and you have to know how to repair the monitors. I mean, you know, even, you know, the monitors these things use, you know, they've all been pretty much been stopped, you know, being manufactured several years ago. You know, CRT monitors are not available anymore. Everything went to LCDs, and you can't adapt the new technology to work with the old games. I mean, there are ways to make them fit, but it's kind of, you know, these games are kind of designed around the monitors and everything. They're you know, it's part of the whole experience. We'd like to try to keep everything original, running on original hardware whenever we can.
So it's pretty much, if you see a game that's junked, you still might need that just for parts.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Yeah, I mean, it's not uncommon to, you know, to purchase extra machines that are just in, even if they're in poor shape physically, I mean, just to get any of the parts that might be, you know, might be useful out of it.
On the graphic end, we kind of mentioned this, but, and I'm not a gamer.
Mm-hmm.
My parents were pretty much, you don't need to waste your money on this. The other kids were luckier than I. But at what point did the graphics change and become... from the dot matrix style to the more fluid artwork that you see now with the gaming?
Well, I mean, basically the graphics technology all depended on just the electronics technology going into the games. And, you know, the biggest advancement was always just how much memory the games can have, you know, to store the game programs or just to be able to run the games, you know, like RAM, like a computer. That was kind of what determined what type of graphics most of the games were using for years and years and years. And then it started moving on to where computing technology became powerful enough where they could start using different types of graphic technologies like polygon graphics, which is what nearly all games use now, where everything is just mathematical computations. It's just making geometric shapes and creating the graphics from that. Where the old games weren't doing it that way. They had pre-programmed little characters that they would place in the screen and move around. And then on the newer games, everything is done on the fly because the computers are powerful enough to do that. Yeah.
Out of the collection that's here at the exhibit, is there one that you specifically like playing? And then is there one you like specifically because of the artistic aspect of the, like you said, the case and artwork on the side?
Yeah, I mean, you know, actually, I mean, one of my favorite games actually is Daytona USA, which is a game that came out in 1994. It's the, you know, the twin racing driving game over here. And, you know, it's, I mean, that game actually is the most earning arcade game of all time. The most popular game of all time is Ms. Pac-Man. But which everybody's familiar with, but this game was also a very popular game in its day. But I mean, as far as classics go, I mean, probably one of my favorite games is probably Tempest, which over here, which has a fantastic cabinet and artwork as well. But
my first experience was Defender.
Yeah.
And then after that, it was the original Star Wars arcade.
Right.
You have Empire here, but.
No, it's actually a Star Wars in there now, yeah.
Oh,
yeah, we'll change the sign out, but yeah.
The exhibit will be running from September 29th through January 1st. So get down to the Exploration Place if you're in the area. If you're not, try to make plans to come by. Jeff has been gracious enough to let the people here in Kansas view these and actually even get to play these games as well.
Yeah, it'd be great. You know, come down and see them. You don't get to see them anymore.
Well, thank you very much, Jeff.
Yeah, you're welcome.
I'm dual-wielding with both of my guns. They're all out for blood. Gotta stop the flood. It's Halo. I'm playing Halo. I'm playing Halo. I'm playing Halo. Halo. Cortana won't stop with the grief. I'm beyond belief. Cause I'm Master Chief. It's Halo. I'm playing Halo. I'm playing Halo. I'm playing Halo. Halo.
Thank you for listening to Comic Pop Library. We welcome your comments and suggestions by emailing us at admin@comicpoplibrary.com. All emails submitted become the property of Comic Pop Library and are subject for use in our show. We would also appreciate it if you would spread the word about Comic Pop Library by posting about us on Twitter, Facebook, or just tell someone about us. This podcast is not endorsed by any comic book publisher or distributor and is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. The views and comments of the show host are their own and are not reflective of any business, entity, or organization associated with ComicPopLibrary.com.